Mark chapter 12, verse 41. Jesus sat down opposite the place where the offerings were put and watched the crowd putting their money into the temple treasury. Many rich people threw in large amounts, but a poor widow came and put in 2 very small copper coins, worth only a fraction of a penny. Calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, "I tell you the truth, this poor widow has put more into the treasury than all the others. They all gave out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in everything, all she had to live on." A short reading this morning, but I'm sure it will prompt us and bless us. To explain to our visitors, Andy, our pastor, and various other visitors have been taking us through the subject, sort of Christian living. And last week we were talking about service, and this week we've moved on to the subject of stewardship. I sort of looked up this word, stewardship, because I thought, well, is that a Bible word? Well, it sort of is, and it isn't. You won't find it, for example, in the NIV version. You will find a reference in the parable in Luke 16 in the King James version, but in the NIV that's translated as a manager, which doesn't sound quite Bible-ish, really. Stewardship sounds much more like a Bible word than manager. As we go through this morning, you'll see really that it is an idea, and manager in some ways is a good description. But we understand that as Christians, as believers, we have responsibilities, and that stewardship is perhaps a good way of describing that. This story that we have read together involves money, and I'm getting a little concerned here. Some of you might remember that the last time I preached was in August. It was about school holidays time, so perhaps not many of you were here. But I remember, if anybody remembers actually what the subject was. Anybody? I won't be offended if you forget, but I'd be really chuffed if somebody remembers. Similar, yes. Where is your heart? Store up for yourselves treasure in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Do you see a theme? And it's rather worrying, isn't it? You know. But I'm here this morning to speak to you about stewardship. The other Saturday, I spent a few hours at a seminar with other Baptist treasurers. I spent a few hours in the seminar. Jill and a friend spent a few hours shopping. I don't know who got the best out of that, but there we are, in Exeter this was. And the speaker did at some point explain how he persuaded his congregation to increase their giving. But I want to make it really clear this morning, right at the outset, that it's not my aim to do that. It's not my aim to tell you how you should live. It's not my aim to make anyone feel guilty or persuade anyone to give any more. All those things are for you and for me to grapple with. That's not my purpose. Like the disciples, you know, we find ourselves in a privileged place this morning. I don't know if you ever view it like that. You know, when we read the Bible, whether it be at home alone or whether it's here in a congregation, do you know, as we read those words, as this story is accounted or recounted to us, I suppose it's because I have a kind of a good imagination. I like reading books and I have a good imagination in that way. But it's kind of like as if you were there. And we've witnessed something this morning as we've read this. We've witnessed an act of true faith. And what's more, we've heard what the Lord had to say about it. And that's what I want us to do this morning. I want us to explore really that, what and what our response might be. It's one of those Bible stories where you can paint a picture. We've got a little slide here. I think that was done by somebody called Tissot. I'm not sure, but you know when you pinch things off the interweb, you don't know what. But if it helps you in your mind's eye, you know, there's a picture. My little bit of study suggests that this was where the money for the poor was collected. And there's a sense this took place in the temple, not in the inner part of the temple where the worship went on, but in the sort of public areas. And this took place there. But you know, as we've already thought this morning, as we've taken up our own offering, we see that as part of our worship. And so here, as part of the temple worship, they were making their offerings for the poor. And what does the Lord see? As the rich line up to demonstrate their wealth and their charitable nature for everyone to see, a poor widow comes in. You know, I doubt anybody else even noticed. But the Lord noticed. And she comes in with her offering for the poor. An insignificant amount. We have another little picture. I guess they're sort of Roman type coins. And you can see they're just... What would we... I suppose those of us who are old enough might think of a farthing, might we? I won't say hands up who remembers a farthing. But you know, you get the idea, don't you?
The equivalent of the half fee that got out of circulation in 1971.
Yeah, I remember decimalisation.
Sorry?
I remember decimalisation.
Yeah. Well, they introduced that at half fee.
Yeah.
Interesting. They're not very good. They're Greek coins.
Thank you for that. Other people's money. It's a bit like the euro then. We haven't rehearsed this, okay? But thank you, Malcolm, for that. It's great. But yes, to the observer, this was nothing. She wasn't really making any contribution at all. It was nothing. But the thing is that the Lord sees this. Perhaps nobody else does. Now, sometimes when we read a Bible account of something like this, we would expect from the Lord there to be a response, a commendation of the widow, a well done, a rebuke of the ostentation of the rich as they throw their wealth into the thing. Whatever it was. I don't think anybody really knows, you know, what it was that the offering was made into. I've seen lots of pictures sort of suggesting there was some form of trumpet thing, but nobody, I don't think, really knows. But he doesn't do that. Instead, he takes his disciples aside. And just as we this morning are in a sort of more intimate setting, it's not quite a cathedral, is it, here? No archbishops here. I think he was at Yeovilton, wasn't he? Yeah. He didn't get much TV coverage, though. Not in favour at the moment. But, sorry. The Lord draws the disciples aside. It's an intimate. And to me, that means it must have been really important. Because these were the 12 men, with one exception, who were the leaders of the future church. These were the men that were going to preach the gospel, that were going to plant churches, that were going to do miraculous things. And he took them to one side. and made his observations with them. What did he observe? He observed it's easy to be generous when you're rich. He observed that the widow gave away everything she had to live on. And that widow's gift was therefore of the greatest value. I think his idea was to give them something to think about, not to use it for a sermon like I'm doing this morning, but to give them something to think about, perhaps to see what their response might be. We know, of course, that this is recorded in two Gospels, in Mark's Gospel and Luke's Gospel. He wanted them to think about it. And so we can do the same thing and use it to learn about our giving of what we have. You see, I don't think the widow viewed what she had as being meagre. She just viewed it as a gift from God to be used. And I think that's what I understand stewardship to be. To care for and to use what God has given us. And as in the widow's case, she gave everything. A little thought came to my mind as I looked through this. That widow had nothing to spare. And yet, she spared nothing. She gave it all away. You see, this story is much more about what it costs the giver than the value to the recipient. It's about the spirit, the heart of the gift that is made. Yes, this is about money, and it does involve giving, and it does challenge us about what we give. Could it be said of me that I gave all that I had to live on? No. Now, you don't know, the Lord knows, and I know there might have been the occasions where I was particularly generous. But I've never given everything. It's quite significant, isn't it, that today, as we've thought around the memorial there of the sacrifice of others, that this is what we're talking about. We're talking about sacrificial giving. Giving till it hurts, if you like. So you can see why I said in the introduction, I'm not here to persuade anybody to anything, but just to challenge us all together as we have reflected upon this little incident that's recorded here for us. Paul takes up the theme of giving, and there are bits of the Bible that will be familiar to you about this, aren't there? Some that I picked up, for example, when Paul writes to Timothy, who you recall was a pastor, and he says to him, command. Command, don't ask, don't beg, don't persuade. You tell them, those who are rich in this present world, not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. I expect in Timothy's church, as in many New Testament churches, there were great contrasts. You remember that one of the problems in the Corinthian church was that those that had a lot came together to feast and forgot all about those who had little. You remember that in other places, like in Ephesians, for example, Paul has to write about how masters should treat slaves and how slaves should be towards masters. There were great contrasts, because the Christian gospel isn't just for the poor, but it's not just for the rich. It's for everyone. And as a consequence, people find themselves in churches and they're not all the same. As I look around at you, there's no one of you is the same. We're not clones, are we? Praise the Lord for that. Yes, there's a few of those, I suppose, yes. But even their characters are different. We're not, and God has given some a little and some a lot. And perhaps some, I don't think there's any in this church. If there was, I'd get hold of them. A great deal, mega wealth, as it were, but no. But what's this verse say? Is it meant, if you've got a little bit of savings, is it meant to make you squirm in your seat? No, it's not. But it's meant to persuade you to change your emphasis, to change your way of thinking, to change your point of view, and to rather be rich in doing good and to be willing to share what you have. And if we were to follow the widow's example, even to the extent of really giving things up sacrificially. I suppose the verse that we the verses that we all know come in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, where Paul writes, "Remember this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows generously will reap generously. Each man should give what he has decided in his heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work." So I suppose if we want to put all this into a few words, and I find that very difficult, we have to firstly acknowledge that everything we have comes from God. Everything that I have is a gift from God. And I guess that if we don't really believe that, there's a niggling bit of us that says, I worked for that. If there's a niggling bit of said, I made that. I created that. I built that. Then we haven't really taken the first step. And it's really difficult for the other things to follow. My house, my car, yes, my little bit of savings, my pension fund, boo-hoo. All these things are a gift from God. You notice I've used the my. That's not because I want you to sort of, admire me particularly, but I find it difficult to tell anybody else what they should be doing with regards to these things. Secondly, with those gifts comes a responsibility as to how they are used. Out of all my wealth, my giving should be done with enthusiasm and from a willing heart. The Lord loves a cheerful giver. I don't think it means that the Lord loves us if we give, with a grin on our face or laughing. I think it means with real enthusiasm. I think it means because we really, really want to. And then to go a state further, it should be sacrificial. We read from Corinthians chapter 9. I picked that because it's something we're familiar with. The Lord loves a cheerful giver. But if we were to read the whole thing in its context, we'd go back into chapter 8 and find how Paul writes there about the believers in Macedonia. That's part of Greece. Really topical, isn't it? Sometimes the Bible's so up to date. He writes about the believers in Macedonia who were really poor. But they were generous, and they gave, although they were poor, gifts to others. And that's the context of when we get to chapter 9. So you see, our giving should be sacrificial. We should be giving out of our more than just what we, you know, what our means are, as it were. Now, these are not easy things to say. This is not, you know, because it just couldn't so easily come across that one is stood here, has studied the passage and come to the conclusion that you all need berating this morning, so that you, you know, put your hands in your pockets more. But I don't know you that intimately, do I? I don't know what's in your bank balance. I don't know, you know, what you do, who you support. I do know from conversation with some folks, of course, that lots of things they do, lots of sponsorship, lots of money sent to missionaries, lots of gifts made to this fellowship. Of course, I do know those things, but I don't know the whole story. So it's difficult, I must confess to you, to say these things this morning. I mean, in one sense, it's perhaps too easy to say, because we could be too glib about it. And then in another sense, it's really difficult, because I certainly don't want it to appear that I would say to you the things you ought to do that I couldn't challenge myself with. So I want us all this morning to be challenged about the stewardship, the care of what God has given us, as how he has so richly blessed us. And I know I've joked, I made a joke about Greece, and I've left Italy out of it, I'm sorry. But yeah, but you know, everything aside, recession, whether we're headed for that or whatever it might be, we are incredibly, incredibly blessed. I left a home this morning. I don't know what's going to happen when I get back. I did lock the door, I remember. But you know, I left a home this morning full of possessions. It was warm. There was food in the cupboards. The garden was looking quite good. You know, how blessed we are. I haven't come to you this morning out of a mud hut. We haven't come here to hear the heat beating off a tin roof and to sit on planks of wood stacked on a few bricks. But they're a Christian. They're a fellow believers who live in those circumstances. We're just so, so blessed. And when the Lord took the disciples to one side, he just wanted them to see that. That they had much, and he wanted them to respond. So, stewardship in terms of our money. But you know, I think it's more than that. I think it's much more than that, and we're not going to find out how much more, because I did say to Jill, who's over the manse with the cosmic, that if they were back by 12 o'clock, we would be finished. Because she was concerned about us being disturbed if they were in there. So, yes, stewardship is about our wealth, the things we have, and how we use those for God. But I think there's more to it than that. It's really about everything that we have and how we use it. And one of the things that challenges me is the use of my time. Paul again writes to the Ephesians like this. He says, "Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but wise, making the most of every opportunity. Because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is. And to the Colossian Christians, he writes, be wise in the way you act towards outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. In the King James Version, that making the most of every opportunity is described as redeeming the time, using the time wisely. Elsewhere, Paul writes and reminds them in Corinthians, I think it is, that time is short. There's a sense of urgency about time not to be wasted in the way we live and serve the Lord. I won't say too much about this because we talked about service last week. But here's a little something that I dug up years ago. It may be a bit out of date now, but I found it quite interesting. We're nearly there. In Psalm 90, it tells us that we have 70 years, or maybe 80 if we're doing well. Of course, modern times, it's not like that, is it? Some of you younger ladies here, you know that statistically, you will live into your 90s. That's the day and age in which we live. That is if the Lord doesn't come before then, of course. But I dug this out. I think I must have used it more years ago than I can remember, but probably with a youth or something. But it's an interesting exercise, isn't it, to see how we spend our time. Of course, not so many years ago, when the computer age really took off, the idea was that the working one was going to be less and the leisure one was going to be more. I know it's quite happened. But that was what we were told. That's how we were told it would be, that these things would change. I'm also not sure about the leisure these days, whether one should subdivide that now into searching the interweb, playing with my Xbox and Wii and all that sort of thing. And I say this to grown-ups because I know what you get. Or tinkering with my eye thing. No. But it's a challenge, isn't it? If you think of it like that, one lifetime. We have one lifetime. How do we use it? If we lose some money, we might recoup all or part of the loss. But time, you'll never get that back. It doesn't take a great philosopher to realize that, does it? Life's experience teaches that. And so that's why Paul, when he was writing there, is exhorting the believers in those places to make the most of every opportunity, to use the time, to redeem the time, to use it wisely. Moses wrote a psalm, Psalm 90. Part of it says, the length of our days is 70 years or 80, if we have the strength. Yet their span is but trouble and sorrow, for they quickly pass and we fly away. And further on he says, teach us to number our days aright, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. What's he saying? What's his prayer? That God will make us really aware that time is just that. Forget Doctor Who, right? Time is just that, from here to there. God has given it to you. I don't know. As I look, there's some of you, you're looking pretty good. So I don't know how long you've got. But God has given you a time. God has a plan for your life within that time. And we have a responsibility as to how we use that for Him. If we have a real sense of time and eternity, then we'll live accordingly, won't we? If we don't have that sense of time and eternity, then we just live in the here and now. We live really mostly for self. I said just now, didn't I, you know, that those some of those things might change for some of you as you might live to be much longer. I said, unless the Lord comes first. We forget that, don't we, sometimes? It's perhaps not a trendy bit of Christian life to talk about, really. But nevertheless, the Lord himself said, he said, no one knows the hour but my Father. There's a lovely hymn that describes it as the Lord having his foot on the doorstep. That's how close it is. Because we don't know. So we need to live our lives as if it is just that, that any moment the Lord could return. And we'd be challenged about what we've done, about how we've used our time, how we've used our God-given gifts and skills and abilities, as well as our wealth. So I think it's time to summarize, don't you? Everything we have is from God. We sang that lovely hymn this morning. Apparently it's the nation's favorite hymn, or so they say on Songs of Praise. One of my favorites, certainly. And that verse spoke of our Saviour's sacrifice, of his death on the cross. We have from God a Saviour who gave himself for us. We have from God our salvation, that knowledge of forgiveness of sins, and a hope, a certain hope, not a hope, of eternity with him. He gives us spiritual gifts. And he gives us physical gifts, all our worldly wealth, our health and our family, whatever it is you value. And if we have these things, it's not because, well, in my case anyway, it's not because I'm a particularly good guy, but it's because of the grace of God. He's given all those things to me. And my responsibility, our responsibility, is to care for those things, to nurture them, and to use them in service for him, whatever they might be. And can I just give you a final word of encouragement? What the widow did, perhaps other people saw it, but the Lord saw it. I don't know. Perhaps you feel sometimes that your service, your gifts, they're not appreciated. Perhaps you're incredibly generous, but nobody knows. Well, don't be discouraged, and don't be dissuaded. This is what the Lord said in Matthew. Do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so your giving may be in secret. Then your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you. Nothing is done in vain. The Lord sees it all. The God who loves us despite all our failings and weaknesses, he sees, perhaps sometimes when we're just trying. He knows. Because what matters most is our heart, isn't it? The spirit in which we do these things. So we're going to sing a song now. Lord, make me a mountain. And Phil tells me that the man who wrote this also wrote the vegetable song. Isn't that tremendous, that in his mind his inspiration could go from one thing to another? Because I think this is a lovely song, and I hope we can sing it and mean what we sing. Lord, make me a mountain.